The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
And now, The Trumpet Daily with Stephen Flurry.
Hello again, everyone. Welcome back to the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. Lots to get to on today's program. Fair bit of news. And also, we'll finally dig in a little bit more into the Inspector General's report from last Thursday. There have been hearings on Monday, I believe, in the Senate, and then yesterday in the House. So quite a few sound bites. Also, a couple from Donald Trump will be playing here in just a bit as well. But first, I'll just draw your attention to Richard Palmer's Trumpet Brief from last night. That's posted at thetrumpet.com right now about Angela Merkel. He does a really good job of just summarizing some of the things we discussed with you on Monday, I believe it was, and whether or not this is the last, as he says, the last 13 days of her chancellorship. He goes in there and talks about how that she's bought just a little bit of time, but certainly not that much. So if you haven't read that already, make sure that you go to thetrumpet.com and read that today. Also, later on today, after this program, in fact, on Trumpet Hour, Joel Hilliker asks, is the world getting better and better? And through his program, he talks about how that by some measures, you see some improvements here or there, but when you step back and look at the bigger picture, well, it's just the paradox that Herbert Armstrong so often spoke about. How do you explain this? I mean, without understanding the truth that God gives to us, God opens our minds to be able to understand that as many are out there saying, the world's just getting better and better, we're more and more progressive, or we're progressing along. Here we are, poised and ready for World War III, all of these nuclear weapons that have spread around the earth. So make sure that you you listen to today's Trumpet Hour, the Wednesday edition of Joel Hilliker's Trumpet Hour broadcast. That comes up right after this program ends. Well, Kim Jong-un he's being treated like a hero in China. He was welcomed there yesterday by Chinese President Xi Jinping. He gave Mr. Kim full military honors, welcomed him in the Great Hall of the People in central Beijing. Their wives were there in attendance as well. The Times of London says the timing of the visit confirmed the crucial place in the diplomatic activity played by China. This is something we talked about last week. The crucial role of China in these negotiations between the United States and North Korea. The Times says despite claims by the U.S. government that the North intends to yield to its demands to denuclearize fully and quickly, the only steps taken so far are in keeping with the diplomatic course proposed last year by China. Proposed by China last year. Incremental steps by each side aimed at gradually reducing tension. So together with this, it was on Monday of this week that the Department of Defense confirmed what President Trump promised there in Singapore at the summit, saying that the U.S. would cancel the military exercises that it held with South Korea. And this is exactly what China proposed 9 months ago. Leave aside the summit for a moment. And again, look at China behind the scenes. There were two meetings in China Mr. Kim had in the lead up to the Singapore summit. Now he's there, welcomed like a hero yesterday. But if you go back to 9 months ago when China was proposing that the United States put a freeze on these nuclear drills, or rather these defense drills, these military exercises, not nuclear drills. But when China proposed this just 9 months ago, the U.S. just rejected it. flatly and said, no way are we going for this so-called freeze-for-freeze proposal. We do this and you do that, where the U.S. would agree to freeze military exercises and then North Korea would freeze its nuclear program. It was just 9 months ago when the U.S. said, no way is that possible. We will not accept a so-called freeze-for-freeze agreement. That's what President Trump himself said in November. Ambassador to the UN, Nikki Haley, she called the proposal insulting. And now, for the most part, that's pretty much U.S. policy. I mean, that represents a dramatic change, to say the least. It says here, the Times' Asia editor wrote this morning that no one can feel more satisfaction than the government of China right now. I mean, China is cheering this freeze. I think this is still the Times of London. It's one of the Times. It says the presence in Beijing today and tomorrow of Mr. Kim confirms what has become increasingly clear since last week's summit in Singapore, that however else the other participants in the diplomatic process may feel, China has come out of it remarkably well, and its ideas are influential. China's behind the deal. China's behind the negotiations. We've wrote about this at length over the years at thetrumpet.com, how that North Korea is just a little puppet controlled by China. It's just a bit player. Quartz, the publication, points out pointing out here that China is behind this push for the military operations or the military exercises freeze by the United States. Let me just read to you what it says in The Plain Truth. This is from 1959. The grand strategy here is to push America out of the neighborhood, to get rid of the United States. And you'll remember, as we covered on this program, that not only did President Trump say that we're going to put a freeze on nuclear exercises, or military, I keep saying nuclear, but we're not only going to freeze the military exercises, eventually, I mean, I want to get those troops home, those troops that are stationed in South Korea. That's the grand strategy here. That's the goal. It said in that 1959 Plain Truth piece, Red China insists it has a legal right not only to Tibet, but also to many ports of India and Southeast Asia. I mean, this has been their policy from the get-go. They rule the region, and they want the United States out. Their constant dream, it says, for centuries has been ultimate world conquest. Again, they take the long view. They take the long view, and the United States tends to look at the short-term gains. It says China knows, however, that in this highly industrialized age, she can accomplish this dream only as an ally of Russia. China is now ready to begin devouring the rest of Asia with Russia's secret military backing. And so you have China behind North Korea, and then you don't have to look very far to see Russia behind China. And this is why because of prophecy, this is why we watch the rise of China as a superpower, and Russia too, and this Asian alliance, this Asian superpower that's forming, this 200 million man army. And how are you going to make up 200 million men, or how are you going to put together an army of that size without these nations coming together, these nations where billions of people live? These are some dramatic developments, and there's quite a few other items here that we've assembled that I'll just have to skip through because I do want to leave some time for some of these many clips that we have pulled for you here today. Let me just conclude, though, this section anyway, by, again, quoting from Herbert Armstrong. You can find this, I believe, in our booklet, He Was Right. He says, "Already I see the clouds of World War III gathering at this conference." This is him writing following the first meeting of the United Nations back in 1945. "I do not see peace being germinated here, but the seeds of the next war." That's what he saw. That's what he saw back in 1945. In 1977, Mr. Armstrong wrote, "The United Nations won't be able to bring peace. The aggressor nations, and we are so gullible, we never recognize them until after they plunge the world into another war. The aggressor nations will go right on with their scheming and diabolical planning for world rule." That's what's happening. And you have to give the Trump administration at least some credit for pulling out of the UN Human Rights Organization. This was something that President Obama, heartily embraced. And the Trump administration, I didn't get the sound bites, but they announced this week, that's enough. And not only that, we're gonna reduce our funding. This organization, this branch of the UN, it's just an excuse for these kinds of nations, the aggressor nations, to get up there and to just basically trash Israel, even as those nations go about their human rights violations en masse. Well, as I say, look at Russia and China in prophecy, and then also our He Was Right booklet for more on these earth-shaking prophecies. Well, the Inspector General's report came out, I believe it was last Thursday, and we did touch on it on Friday's program. And as I said at the top of the show, there was a Senate hearing on Monday, and then the House Oversight Committee were listening to testimony from Inspector General Horowitz. And then also, I believe, Director Wray, who presides over the FBI. But just going back to this report, let me first play for you a clip from President Trump. This was a speech that he gave yesterday. I forget the organization he's speaking in front of, but it was in Washington, D.C., and he's commenting here on the IG report from last week. Clip one.
When you read the IG report with these really dishonest people, and I was never a deep state guy. Let me tell you, we got some bad people that are doing bad things. But when you read that IG report about how she got away with what she got away with, it's a disgrace. It's a total disgrace.
He was never a deep state guy, as he said there. I thought that was interesting. But then when you read the report, all of the facts laid out, it's a disgrace, as he said there. That people can get away with that sort of thing. That they're above the law. Listen to what he continued to say in that same speech, clip two.
And you ought to see the hearings that are right now on television, but that folks are being, you know, they're going on to the mainstream fake news media. They want to focus on immigration because they want to keep the cameras away from the hearings. Because those hearings are not good for them. In fact, they're a disaster for them. The whole thing is a scam. It's a scam. And what's happened is a disgrace.
Here again, some interesting comments there. Him talking about the immigration crisis that the media is manufacturing, saying that that's the scam, and that he's basically saying there they're using this as a distraction away from this scandal, this disgrace. Now, as you look at that immigration scandal, to just use the language the media would use. And we did touch on this yesterday and the day before, but let me just read for you what Fox News had to say about this detention policy. It says the Obama administration actually expanded the system of detaining families, typically mothers and their minor children, after a huge surge of Central Americans along the U.S.-Mexican border in 2014. That's not that long ago. Does everyone remember this? This huge surge of Central Americans coming into the United States during the Obama years. It says the policy resulted in many minors being detained in various locations in much criticized conditions, either with their families or by themselves if they crossed the border alone. It says videos and photos at the time. Remember, there, I mentioned that report the other day where someone used a 2014 photo to try to criticize President Trump's policies. And it was from the Obama years. Videos and photos at the time showed children in tears, many of them wearing dirty clothes in detention facilities where they were kept with their families. It says the conditions, which ranged from 6 adults and children sleeping crammed into 2 mattresses laid on a concrete floors to sick minors not receiving medical care, were documented in many news accounts and reports by human rights groups. At the time, Obama administration officials argued they had no choice but to implement policies intended to deter families from entering the U.S. illegally. Now, this is from an administration that wanted open borders, that wanted new Democrat voters. This was an administration that hardly applied the laws that were on the books back then. But here they were, like this report says, the officials speaking for Obama said that, well, we have no choice but to implement these policies. I mean, we've got to discourage families from trying to enter into the U.S. It's just a few years ago. And now, you know, when the Department of Homeland Security Secretary Kristen Nielsen, when she gets up and tells reporters like she did on Monday, look, this happened during Obama's years. This happened during George W. Bush's years. I mean, they may have been detained at a rate less than ours because, yes, Donald Trump is clamping down. He is tightening border security. The rate might be less than ours, but they absolutely did this. This is not new, she said on Monday. And now, so she's harassed. Now they're chasing after her. I saw a video just this morning where this large group of Democrat activists, they accosted her at a restaurant last night for 10 minutes, shouting at her. These are the same ones saying that for anyone to be detained, that's like going back to a Nazi concentration camp. Who are the ones that are acting like fascists? Chasing them down, shouting them down. Whether it's a White House press briefing or someone just having a dinner, a private dinner at a restaurant. Listen to what Chuck Schumer said, I think this was yesterday, about his part. Well, okay, the reporters are asking him. The president says this, this, and this. Why don't you draw up some legislation and let's get this moving and take care of this problem? Here's clip 3.
There are so many obstacles to legislation, and when the president can do it with his own pen, it makes no sense. Ryan, the president signing it, attaching it to things that are unacceptable. Legislation is not the way to go here when it's so easy for the president to sign it. It's an excuse.
The president can just take care of this himself, says the senator, who among so many would say that this president is a tyrant. He's a heavy-handed tyrant. He's a king. King me. And now when they have the opportunity to do something about immigration, when they've not done anything for decades, well, then they just put it back on President Trump. It's his fault. That's the point of this story. That's the point. That's why it's gotten the widespread coverage it's gotten. Because it's aimed directly at President Trump. And President Trump yesterday was right to say that they want to keep the cameras away from the hearings. They want to keep the cameras away from the facts and the IG report, frankly. Could be a lot stronger. It should be stronger. But there are, nevertheless, quite a lot of facts collected in that one document. Here is the Inspector General, Michael Horowitz. This was from his opening statement, I believe, at the hearing on Monday, clip 4.
We found the FBI's explanations for its failures to take immediate action after discovering the Wiener laptop in October 2016 to be unpersuasive, and we did not have confidence that the decision of Deputy Assistant Director Strzok to prioritize the Russia investigation over following up on the Wiener laptop was free from bias in light of his text messages.
So that's where there was some really big concern there. I mean, they set aside all of these revelations about Anthony Weiner's laptop in early, what was it, October 2016, because they were so preoccupied with the Russia investigation. Then they get to the end of October. They all think Hillary Clinton's going to win. They don't want to leave this on the shelf until after the election because, well, if she gets elected and then we come back and say, oh, hang on a second, there were tens of thousands of other emails that were out there and we said that there weren't. And so that's why they reopened the investigation. Well, anyway, just to come back to this report, here comes this 560-some-odd page report. Just loaded with facts about bias. Peter Strzok, Lisa Page, Andy McCabe, and on it goes. Jim Comey. Listen to this montage that we put together on that very point. This is moving up to 19.
We did not find no bias with regard to the October events. What we say here is not, as Senator Crapo mentioned, which is that there was no bias, and we were not convinced that that was not a biased decision. When we got to October, we had concerns that there may be bias impacting the decision to prioritize the Russia investigation.
Your investigation found fault in an exchange of text messages that you identified that demonstrated some political bias. Is that right?
Correct. I think it's clear from certainly the email, the text messages we've talked about with regard to Mr. Strzok, that he had, as we say here, a biased state of mind.
What you're telling us is you found bias. Those who you found the bias among said, well, we didn't let it bleed into our work performance, and you don't have evidence to disprove that.
Correct.
Bias, 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 over and again, at the hearings, certainly in the report. And yet at this hearing, right alongside Mr. Horowitz, there's the new FBI director, Christopher Wray. And here's what he concluded. Here's clip 20.
This report did not find any evidence of political bias or improper considerations actually impacting the investigation under review.
So we found a lot of bias and therefore conclude there was no bias. That's the world we live in today. Truth cast to the ground. Truth. No one pleads for truth, like Isaiah said. No one pleads for it. Truth fails. Isaiah 59:15. And so you have two high-ranking individuals. You got the inspector general. I mean, these are now during the Trump years, and they're trying to clean up some of the mess left over from Obama's deep state. And you see just how deep it goes. I mean, even like Cheryl Atkinson brings out, the use of double negatives there. We didn't find no bias. The meaning there is that we didn't find that there was no bias in the report. Instead of, as she said, you should just come out and say there was bias directly. But even there, I mean, over and again, as you just heard in the montage, over and again, bias, bias, bias. And yet they conclude, and of course, this is what the liberal media just want to take and run with. Okay, so it didn't affect the overall thrust of the investigation. Nothing new to report here. We'll move on, and we'll talk about the latest scandal that's caused by Donald Trump. Cheryl Atkinson. Going back to her report, this is at the Hill. She says 9 times during their joint testimony before a Senate committee on Monday, Department of Justice Inspector General Michael Horowitz contradicted FBI Director Christopher Wray, but nobody appeared to notice. It's an instructive example of how false narratives and talking points in Washington are amplified by inaccurate media coverage. It's more reason you cannot necessarily believe what's reported and repeated. No matter how many are reporting and repeating it. Now, as she said, Horowitz should have done better himself by not using so many confusing double negatives. But even there, I mean, they only go so far. He said proudly, you know, look, the facts are all there, and you know, it's up for you and the American people to make judgments. But like was brought out in the exchange between Lindsey Graham and him anyways. I mean, who's going to be held accountable here for this kind of lawless behavior? I think this was from Monday's hearing. This would have been in front of the Senate committee. And listen to Lindsey Graham, this exchange that he has with Mr. Horowitz. This is clip 5.
Okay, I'm going to read this text message from Page to Strzok on August the 8th. after he'd gotten the nomination. She says, Trump's not ever going to become president, right? Right? Strzok responded, no, no, he's not. We'll stop it. Now, I don't know how you feel about that. That's pretty unnerving. Strzok, wasn't he the lead investigator of the Clinton email investigation?
He was, in essence, the lead investigator.
Okay, yeah. So the head guy looking at Clinton on August the 8th says, we got to stop Trump. Now, was that just idle talk? A week later, here's what they say to each other. Strzok text message to Lisa Page. I want to believe the path you threw out for consideration in Andy's office, that there's no way he gets elected, but I'm afraid we can't take that risk. It's like an insurance policy in the unlikely event you die before you're 40.
So this was the lead investigator, not only of the Hillary Clinton server investigation, but he then became the lead investigator of the Trump-Russia collusion matter as well. So here he is presiding over both, and he's telling his friend who's helping him with this, we're going to stop this. He is not going to become president. And then the insurance policy a week later, like Mr. Graham brings out there. And then you mentioned, you heard mentioned there the name Andy. That refers to Andy McCabe. He's the deputy director of the FBI. Meeting together with Lisa Page and then the lead investigator. And this was the back and forth going on, the texting going on between them. Senator Graham went on to say this, clip six.
Now, this was an email sent in February 2016 from Page to McCabe. Mm-hmm. Hey, you've surely already considered this, but in my view, our best reason to hold the line at two agents and two prosecutors, is she might be our next president. How did you feel about that?
We were concerned about it, and we lay out here why we were concerned.
Okay, let's keep talking about this interview. One of the FBI agents in the interview said on Election Day mm-hmm. to another FBI agent, you should know that I'm with her. Now, her was Clinton, right?
Correct.
How do you feel about that?
Very concerned.
Okay, eventually very concerned gets to be enough already.
See, who's going to be held to account? Okay, you're concerned about it. But what steps have you... So far as I know, there was the report yesterday, I guess, that Strzok was escorted out of the FBI the other day. But there's no reports that he's been fired. I think Lisa Page might have resigned. But, I mean, as far as penalties go, I mean, it's clearly the Hillary Clinton was let off the hook. But then all of this other evil, this corruption, like my father brought out in Saving America temporarily. I mean, the more and more you dig into it, the more and more corruption you find at the FBI, at the DOJ. They texted back and forth about, well, there should be two investigators and two prosecutors. That's it. And wouldn't you know, that's who were present at the interview with Hillary Clinton on July 2nd, 2016. It was exactly the way they set it up. They said, look, I don't know if it had to be limited or maybe there were more that wanted to come. But the reasoning was, hey, she could be the next president of the United States. I mean, we've got to go easy on her. And as you know, I mean, the exoneration letter or the exoneration that Jim Comey brought out on July 5th, just a few days later, it was already determined that she was not going to be indicted. It was already decided even before this so-called interview where they just went right through the motions. It's amazing. And it's all laid out there in this 560-page document. And now their work is done, I guess. Now they can move on. Well, to paraphrase what the president said yesterday, it's a disgrace that truth fails like this. It's a disgrace that none call for justice, that no one's pleading for truth. We all trust in vanity and speak lies. One final clip here from Lindsey Graham. This is number seven.
As early as March, these people hated Trump, and this investigation was anything but by the book. And at the end of the day, what Comey did just blows me away as much as it does y'all. And I can't believe that this happened to my FBI.
I can't believe it happened. I can't believe this is going on at the FBI and the DOJ. Going back to that Saving America article, May, June, just this year in the Trumpet, my father said, "We're witnessing a government and a nation on the verge of collapse," he said. "In fact, all this shocking behavior from government officials and the national press, look at the way the press is operating this week. It continues, this shocking behavior. All of this shocking behavior shows that the nation only narrowly averted the destruction of the fundamental nature of the Constitutional Republic." And then he went on to explain that it's just a temporary deliverance. But we don't realize just how close we were to the destruction of the fundamental nature of our Constitutional Republic. At yesterday's hearing, this was the House Oversight Committee. This exchange here is from Representative Trey Gowdy, and here again, Inspector General Horowitz. Clip 8.
Inspector General Horowitz, if one of your investigators talked about Lisa Page and Peter Strzok the way they talked about Donald Trump, would you have left them on the IG investigation?
No.
Did you ever have an agent when you were a prosecutor with this level of bias?
You know, as I've laid out here, I thought this was completely antithetical to the core values of the department and extremely serious.
Can you speak up, please?
I'm sorry.
I heard you. But you can say it where Mr. Nadler can hear you, too.
You know, my view of this was that this was extremely serious, completely antithetical to the core values. In my personal view, having been a prosecutor and worked with FBI agents, I can't imagine FBI agents suggesting even that they might use their powers to investigate, frankly, any candidate for any office.
And that's what happened all the way through 2016. They were suggesting they were going to use their powers to investigate this candidate or to nix the investigation on the other. It's right there in the messages, back and forth. He can't imagine it. It happened. He was asked there at the start. Now, if you had individuals on your investigative team with this kind of a bias, would you keep them on your team? No. But they left them on the team in 2016. Comey had him there, and then when it shifted over to the Russia investigation, Comey put him there, Strzok. He put him in charge of it. That's how deep-seated the bias was. And it wasn't just a few text messages, as was brought out in one of the messages. I mean, they're commenting on meetings that they had with high-ranking officials like Andy McCabe. Trey Gowdy went on to talk about, again, the obvious, the blatant bias on display here. Here's clip 9.
If someone is prejudging the outcome of an investigation before it ends, and someone is prejudging the outcome of an investigation before it even begins, what is more textbook bias than prejudging this investigation before it's over and this one before it begins? I am struggling to find a better example of outcome determinative bias than that. So what am I missing?
Well, I think certainly with regard to the Russia investigation you mentioned, as you know, we are looking at that in an ongoing way. With regard to the Clinton email investigation, I think as we lay out here and go through it, we looked at text messages, emails, documents to try and assess whether the specific decisions that we were asked to look at and then the ultimate prosecutorial decision were impacted by Strzok, Page, and the others' views. And what we ended up finding, particularly as to the prosecutor's decision, was that was a decision they made exercising their discretion on their view of the policy, the law, and the facts as it was found. We've laid that out, and in our view, we didn't find or see evidence that the prosecutors were impacted by that bias.
Okay, so that's how they explain it away. All these investigators, these biased investigators, that did not influence the prosecutors. That did not impact whoever it was that might have prosecuted Hillary Clinton. So this flies with the press, because the way the press views themselves, I mean, they see themselves as objective. The left-wing media, they see themselves as above the fray. They could say nothing about the detention centers in 2014, and then they can cry about it on TV like one did last night and think, well, this is totally objective. I'm just giving you the straight truth. Donald Trump is evil. He's the cause. He's the reason. And so then the investigators, they complete all of it, 568 pages, bias, 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 bias. Well, we found a lot of bias and therefore conclude there was no bias. And then we move on. Hey, did you see all of the scandal at the border? Did you see what's going on at the border? Did you hear the little children crying? So you have to parse the language carefully if you're the IG, the Inspector General. Look, I know we found a lot of bias, but there was no evidence that the prosecutors were impacted by that bias. Remember James Comey when he announced on July 5th that we're not going to recommend charges at all. Listen to what he said about the way that the system works. This is from July 5th, 2016, clip 10.
In our system, the prosecutors make the decisions about whether charges are appropriate based on evidence that the FBI helps collect. Although we don't normally make public our recommendations to the prosecutors, we frequently make recommendations and engage in productive conversations with prosecutors about what resolution may be appropriate given the evidence. In this case, given the importance of the matter, I think unusual transparency is in order. Although there is evidence of potential violations of the statutes regarding the handling of classified information, our judgment is that no reasonable prosecutor would bring such a case.
And so here are all these corrupt and biased investigators, including the head of the FBI, who are saying, we have got to stop him. We have got to stop this man from becoming president. They're the ones conducting the investigation. They sit in on the interview together. I mean, these prosecutors and these investigators are in the interview with Hillary Clinton, going through the motions when it had already been determined that the FBI wasn't going to recommend any kind of indictment. And here is Jim Comey at the end of that statement you just heard saying, no reasonable prosecutor is going to bring such a case like this forward. They're all a part of the same system of justice. You've got the investigators and you've got the prosecutors. Okay, well, the prosecutors are the ones that make the final decision. But which prosecutor is going to step forward and say, you know what? I know you're saying everything about how that it wouldn't be reasonable to pursue this, but I'm going to go ahead and pursue it. I mean, that's just crazy to think that didn't influence the decision not to indict. Andy McCarthy at National Review, he writes today, despite the sprawl of Justice Department Inspector General Michael Horowitz's 568-page report on the Clinton emails investigation, there is precious little discussion of the most important issue, the Justice Department and FBI's rationale for declining to prosecute Hillary Clinton. So there's all kinds of detail in the report about the bias, about what the Obama administration knew, but there's precious little about why it decided not to indict, why it decided not to prosecute. McCarthy says, I believe this is intentional. The Inspector General's message is, despite pervasive political bias and investigative irregularities, that's what the report found, all of that, which I have comprehensively documented. Rest assured that nothing too terrible happened here. See, that's the conclusion. We found all of these irregularities. We found all of this bias. We found things done that just shouldn't have been done, that never have been done. so they say. And then the conclusion is, it really wasn't that bad. Their bias didn't factor into the decisions at the end. McCarthy says, in explaining themselves to the IG, Obama Justice Department and FBI officials contended that the make-or-break issue in the case was whether they could prove a criminal state of mind. Investigators say it dawned on them at a very early stage that they could not. Remember, they had to add to the statute. They had to add to the law and say, well, we've got to find criminal intent. We've got to find criminal motivation. And of course, the statute just says, look, if you're dealing with this kind of top secret classified information on a daily basis, you can go to jail just simply for gross negligence. And as it happens, that term was actually in one of the original drafts for her exoneration. But they took that out later because, well, with the final draft, we can't have gross negligence because, I mean, that's language that comes right out of the statute. And so they changed it to whatever it was, extremely careless or whatever. McCarthy says, in other words, the Justice Department added proof elements that are not in the statute. The Espionage Act literally says that if you are a government official who has been entrusted with sensitive information, you are guilty if you either willfully cause its transmission to an unauthorized person or place, or are grossly negligent in permitting it to be removed from its proper custody. That's all that has to happen. And of course, that's what happened. And as McCarthy brings out, if you're wanting to look for intent, you don't have to go any farther than the fact that right as she came into the office as Secretary of State, she set up these private email servers for all of her communications. She didn't want it to be in the State Department where the servers were secure. She wanted to be able to control that information, just like she did when she turned over half the emails and destroyed the rest. There's some other interesting details, fascinating ones as well, from that IG report, specifically about President Obama and what he knew and how involved the White House was in these investigations. We've touched on this in recent weeks. Let me just begin with this is a clip from 60 Minutes. Back in October of 2015, this was a full year before the presidential election. And here is President Obama saying what he did or did not know about Hillary Clinton's private email server, clip 11.
Did you know about Hillary Clinton's use of a private email server?
No.
While she was Secretary of State?
No.
Do you think it posed a national security problem?
I don't think it posed a national security problem.
He didn't know anything about it, and it didn't pose a national security problem. Well, tucked away at a footnote on page 89 of the Inspector General's report, Horowitz says, FBI analysts and prosecutor two told us that former President Barack Obama was one of the 13 individuals with whom Clinton had direct contact using her ClintonEmail.com account. Obama, like other high-level government officials, used a pseudonym for his username on his official government email account. So he was writing to Secretary of State Hillary Clinton at ClintonEmail.com, not .gov, ClintonEmail.com. And this goes to the point that Andy McCarthy has made in recent years, the last couple of years. I mean, he was on this right from the start. The fact that Obama was having communications with her as well. And so the Clinton camp, I mean, they had this as, you know, sort of their ace in the hole. Well, if you go forward, if the Obama DOJ and the Obama FBI go forward with indicting Hillary Clinton for this private email server, what is it going to say about the president himself who had regular communication with Hillary Clinton on this ClintonEmail.com server? Well, coming back to Obama himself, did you know anything about her private server? No. No, nothing. That's what he said in October of 2015, after having years of regular communication with her on this server. He went on to basically justify Hillary Clinton's behavior here. Here's clip 12.
Yeah, you know, she made a mistake. She's acknowledged it. I do think that the way it's been ginned up is in part because of politics.
So she made a mistake. But look, this is all political, he said in October of 2015. It's been ginned up by her opponents. She made a mistake, but that's all that this is. It certainly is no threat to national security. Now, here again, coming back to the Inspector General's report from last week, it says on page 66, former President Obama's comments caused concern among FBI officials about the potential impact on the investigation. So there were lower level investigators who were concerned. What is the President of the United States saying on TV? Why is he saying it's just a mistake, but there's certainly no criminal behavior here? It's just, and she's owned up to it. She's acknowledged it. She knows she should have done better. But look, this is being ginned up by her opponents. So you have the lead investigator. You have Jim Comey, who's made it quite clear. He loved Obama. Couldn't stand Donald Trump. And it seems though as though every single investigator involved in both of those investigations, the Hillary investigation and the Trump-Russia thing, I mean, where have we found a text message that says, you know what, I'm really MAGA, MAGA, MAGA. I really want to see Donald Trump get elected. I really want to see him make America great again. Have you seen one? How come it all flows in one direction, including from the president himself? Here he is on TV, and there's some in the lower levels that are saying, this isn't right. I mean, that's going to affect the investigation. That was in October of 2015. In January of 2016, listen to what the White House press spokesman had to say after being asked about whether or not Hillary Clinton would be indicted. This is clip 13.
Can you say with certainty and confidence that Secretary Clinton will not be indicted because of this email scandal?
That will be a decision that is made by the Department of Justice and prosecutors over there. What I know that some officials over there have said is that she is not a target of the investigation. That does not seem to be the direction that it's trending, but I'm certainly not going to weigh on a decision or in that process in any way. That is a decision to be made solely by independent prosecutors. But again, based on what we know from the Department of Justice, it does not seem to be headed in that direction.
Based on what we know, we at the White House, based on what we know from the Department of Justice, it's not headed in that direction. Some officials over there, Josh Earnest said, some officials over there have said that she is not a target of the investigation. And remember, Lynch, this is all over the IG report as well. She had Comey make sure that he said, look, this is a matter that we're looking into. It's not an investigation. That came from the DOJ. That came from the Department of Justice. Loretta Lynch, who said there's a matter we're looking into, and that's it. And that's all that I want you to say. And here's Josh Earnest in January of 2016, here again, letting the cat out of the bag. Well, you know, we can't, of course, we aren't the prosecutors, you understand, but officials have told me she's not a target. It's not trending in that direction. And then, of course, you move ahead to what President Obama said on Fox News in April of 2016, just a few months after that report, or rather that statement by Josh Earnest. Here's clip 14.
I continue to believe that she has not jeopardized America's national security. Now, what I've also said is that, and she's acknowledged, that there's a carelessness in terms of managing emails that she has owned.
So there's no wrongdoing here, just carelessness. No problem with national security, no problem with gross negligence, anything like that. She's just a little bit careless. And then, as we've played before, I won't play it again, but Chris Wallace then says, well, look, people are looking at these statements you're making and what Josh Earnest said in January and thinking, are you meddling in this investigation? And remember him? Just absolutely not. We never do that. She is not going to be treated differently. I guarantee it. He made that guarantee. And yet look at the fruits. Look at the facts as they're revealed. Like my father said, people don't realize just how close we are to collapse. He said in Saving America, corrupt law enforcement officials led by Barack Obama and with the help of Hillary Clinton conspired to overthrow the government of the United States. That clip I played at the start from the president, President Trump. I don't get into all this deep state stuff, but wow, looking at this IG report, it's shocking. It's shocking. Listen to what Newt Gingrich had to say on Fox. I think this was two nights ago. This would be clip 16.
There really is a deep state. That deep state at the Justice Department gave 97% of its donations in 2016 to Hillary Clinton. The language they use, I mean, if you imagine a government employee who used the same language about African Americans or Latinos or Jewish Americans or Muslim Americans that they use in some of those quotes about Trump supporters, you would have screams to high heaven. It's clear that you had an attitude at the very senior levels, not down at the local caseworker, not down at the level of the local offices, but in the Washington headquarters, both in the Justice Department and in the FBI, the senior figures, by any plausible standard, are corrupt. And they clearly were operating on the premise that Hillary was going to get to be president, and therefore anything they said or did was fine because she'd cover it up.
They were operating on that premise. Victor Davis Hanson brings this out in his latest. You look at all of the, he says, review the Clinton email scandal. Look at the Steele dossier. Look at the FBI informant or the spy misleading the FISA court by the FBI and the DOJ. They were all in on it. And then now this Inspector General's report. Hanson says there emerges a common denominator, the surety by all involved that Hillary Clinton would be president and the need to prepare for that fact. He goes on and gives case after case, person after person, high-ranking official after official, saying why would they risk their careers to meet, like Loretta Lynch did, to meet Bill Clinton on the tarmac, or to behave the way that Comey did in 2016, or to say what Peter Strzok was saying back and forth with Lisa Page, Andy McCabe, or to make all of those leaks. Why would they do all of these sorts of things? Unless they knew in their heart of hearts, just like Jim Comey admitted, that Hillary was going to be president. And all of that corrupt behavior, I mean, that's the kind of thing that would be rewarded later. There is a deep state. Like Gingrich said there, there's a deep state, and it's one-sided in the direction of Obama and Clinton and the radical left. Here's one other snippet from Mr. Gingrich the other night, clip 17.
We should conclude that the American left is quite comfortable with corruption because it so deeply despises the American system, whether that is Barack Obama, whether it is the Attorney General under Obama, whether it is Comey or Mueller. All of these people are the same people, and they go back for over a decade.
Now listen to what he says finally about just how close the United States came to losing its republic. Here's clip 18.
But it unravels gradually, and it keeps unraveling. It's going to keep unraveling some more. Every week that goes by, we learn new things. They're horrifying things. And frankly, they should remind all of us how close we came to losing the country. That you had between Obama and Clinton a total disregard for the American tradition, a total disregard for the truth, whether they were lying about Benghazi or they were lying about bin Laden or they're lying about the Russians or they're lying about the campaign. These people didn't care because they came out of a left-wing background.
That's Newt Gingrich on Fox, I believe, Monday night, saying what my father said a few months ago in that Saving America piece. We're witnessing a government and a nation on the verge of collapse. He says, in fact, all this shocking behavior from government officials and the national press shows that the nation only narrowly averted the destruction of the fundamental nature of the constitutional republic. Well, now America has been saved, but as he says in that same piece, it's only a temporary, it's only a temporary deliverance. And that's why these events, they really do need to drive us to our knees. Our most recent booklet, or one of our newest, How to Pray, is an excellent study that really does tie in with even these events, this news that we discuss on the program. When you talk about the prayer outline and what we're expected to pray, right at the start of our prayers, Thy kingdom come, it really does make you, what you see happening in the world today, in our nations today, it does make you yearn for the kingdom of God. Well, make sure that you stay tuned in to KPCG following this program and listen to Joel Hilliker's Trumpet Hour. That comes up next after the top of the hour. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. If you'd like to email the program, you can send emails to td@kpcg.fm. We'll see you tomorrow.